Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
This is a tough economy. Seth Godin says that it's not going to change for a long time. The recession that we're in, this kind of economy, we see some ups and downs and some bright spots here and there, but I think it's a new world. And yet, the good news is God's still calling us to start churches, isn't he? And he's still providing even in the midst of a really tough economy. And so that's what we want to look at today. And the first thing I want you to know is that what we found, and this was my experience, and this is Tim Jacobs. He's going to be assisting me here. Tell him, first of all, Tim, kind of your story in a minute or so.
Well, I'm from the Phoenix area, Phoenix metro area in Arizona, and I planted a church about 11 years ago in southeast Mesa, which is way on the east end of Phoenix, and I was there for 5 years, and then I moved across to the far other side of town on the west side. And I took over a struggling church called Compass Church. It has grown since then, and we launched a new campus last year. And so we had the opportunity. We launched a campus launched a church 11 years ago during the building boom when everything was going pretty well. And then we launched a campus last year when things are still very difficult, and we were able to pull it off. And so I guess the main thing I want to tell you guys is that this is a great time to launch church, even in a challenging economy, because the needs that people have, the felt needs, are so much greater because they're not finding what they're looking for in their job and in their home value and in their 401k. So they're asking questions, and this is a great time to jump up and make it happen.
My name's Dave Page, and we planted three churches over about 20 years. And one we were at for 8 years, one we were at for 10 years, and then the last one just a year and a half. And then the Evangelical Free Church recruited me. Now I'm the director of church planting for the West. So I basically help guys raise money, train them, coach them when they're planting churches all over the West and others around the country. So love doing that. But here's what I found in my case and most of the guys I work with that have never planted a church. Most church planters don't know how to raise money. They go into it, and I don't know about you, how many like to raise money? Can I see your hand? You like to raise money. Okay, you're an exception. Anybody else that you like to raise money? So we got one out of the whole group who likes to raise money. So most of us, it's a daunting task. We don't necessarily like it, and yet it's so necessary. If you can't raise money, you can't start a church, so it's very important. One of the big takeaways that you hopefully will leave here with is that people give to vision, not to need. So it's going to come down to a vision. So it's not that you have a need problem, the need's there. If they're not giving, it may be a vision problem. So having a compelling vision that you're able to cast and get people excited. A vision is a preferred future. A vision is somewhere that you're going. So you want to be able to kind of paint this picture that people see where you're going and they want to get on board. They want to be part of it. They want to get in on the ground floor of what God's doing with this new church. The other thing we saw too is that people give to people. Why are they going to give to you? Because they like you. Because they believe in you. They trust you. So people give to people. That's why with the Billy Graham Association, it's called the Billy Graham Association, they give to Billy Graham. Even though they're giving to the association, it's like I'm giving to Billy Graham. They do it personally. When people gave to me and my wife, Carrie, they gave to us as we started the church.
One of the interesting things, we mentioned Seth Godin earlier, something that he said a long time ago. He talked about a nonprofit organization and the challenge that any nonprofit has to go in to solicit funds from donors. And he said, remember that you're going to get something that the donor has, But you also have something that they want as well, which is an opportunity to change the world, an opportunity to do something significant. So just as we can often approach a relationship like this and go, oh, I don't want to ask him for money. But remember, you come bearing something as well that is something that they can't provide, which is your vision and the plan that God has laid on your heart that can radically transform their own walk with God, their own faith, and allow them to be part of something that is far beyond what you thought, that far beyond you, anything they thought that they could do. When we look at fundraising, again, it's raising disciples, not raising funds. And I think that's another really important thing as well. You're not just looking at people as a number, as like, okay, this guy's going to give me this, but how do I continue to think about interacting with my donors, and how do I lead them on a spiritual journey? Because they're watching you. You're stepping out in faith, and all of a sudden, it's not just, hey, the money pipeline's coming, but it's, how are things going in your life? How can I be praying for you? It's staying involved in their life and showing that you really do care about them more than just the check that they're writing.
And it's so true that becomes the focus when you are able to reframe that in your own mind and get it out there that I'm helping these people get closer to the Lord. This is a discipleship process. It's not just about giving money. And that's one element. You know, how do you know what's important to you? You know, and what's in your heart? It's that ability. So we want to be able to teach them to give money and to grow as a disciple. They did a major study, and they found that many church planters are unrealistic about the startup costs. It usually costs way more than you think it's going to cost. People ask for a figure, what to put on it. Some have said most planters need to raise $100,000 to $200,000 for the first 2 years. I planted three churches. Two of them grew to over 1,000. We never raised $100,000 in any year. Actually, Tim did, didn't you? Did you raise $100,000 the first church you did?
Our church costs a lot more than $100,000 the first time around, but I was fortunate to be very well funded. I will say this, though. Sometimes you can be overfunded.
Yes.
Okay? In other words, and you say, how in the world is that possible? because you get used to that funding, and there's nothing like you need funds, but understand that I would have rather have had a team. And when I moved to Arizona, I would rather have gone with like a dozen people and half the money than by myself with a lot of money, because you get there, you don't know anybody. But the expectations are really high because, hey, we gave this guy a lot of money. So don't let your lack of funds discourage you, and don't put so much confidence in the fact if you get a lot of. Be careful if someone's willing to offer you, you know, if your church is saying, here, we're going to give you $200,000. That's not a magic bullet. In fact, a lot of churches that get that kind of funding, they might start off really fast, but they don't do very well because they don't know how to, they don't have as their core the ability to bootstrap and to be entrepreneurial. They just think, oh, I got the money, it's no big deal.
So most church planners, the way I look at that, $100,000 to $200,000, that could be your budget for the whole first year. So if you do a launching large process like we teach, and you do previews before, you start getting offerings once a month in the previews, then after a few months you're going into weekly services, you're getting weekly tithes and offerings. So really you can do kind of a bootstrap type of thing, raise a bunch of money to buy like portable church equipment for your marketing, that type of thing. But then once you get that those tithes and offerings coming in from week to week, now you put all that together and you're going to have a budget of $100,000 or $200,000 for that year. So that's a very realistic way to do it versus, oh no, I've got to raise, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 apart from that. We never raise that much. If you can, great. The more the merrier. Underfunding is one extreme. Churches are like businesses. What's the number one reason they close? They run out of cash. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to have a continual cash flow. That's why we say when raising money, one-time gifts are great, but it's the people who give and say, we're going to commit, you know, $100 a month for the first year, $200 a month for the first year. Those become your bread and butter. Those are what you're really looking for, along with the supplemental one-time gifts. And like Tim said, the key is balance. They found that, you know, where they've given you know, $500,000 to $1 million, if you can imagine, to a church plant, it doesn't necessarily do any better than the church plant they gave $50,000 to. And so there's somewhere in there, there's a happy medium. And there's a difference here between fundraising and giving. And let me kind of define this in terms of the difference here. Here's fundraising. If you look up there, fundraising is collecting money from others in return for a product, service, reward, or recognition. So I'm giving something in order to get something back. Whereas giving, now you're in this discipleship process. You're challenging yourself and others to give out of your own resources for spiritual reasons. So it's very different how you come about this. You're not looking so much to be a fundraiser as to have people give. And they're not giving even ultimately to you. They're giving to God, and you're the one who becomes the recipient of that gift. And the good thing is, you know, Philippians is such a great book. And chapter 4, it says it was credited to you. So it's like they get credit for when they give and the fruit that's produced in your church. That's the amazing thing. And when you can get that across to people, you know, kind of the light bulbs go off at that point. So understand the giving part. And the other good news about it, it's just for a season. This is just a unique time in your life and the life of the church where you're asking other people to support you until you're kind of up and running and the regular tithes and offerings come in and you're able to sustain the church through the regular tithes and offerings.
I think that that's really important when he said it's a season, because the thing that always freaks me out about supporting any kind of missionary is that the idea is like, I'm going to have to support this guy until Jesus comes. You know what I mean? But when you can put a starting time and an ending time and a clear amount, then people can get a clear amount in their minds. Okay, well, the sum total of this is going to cost me $10,000 or $20,000 or $5,000. People like that because that's a measurable commitment. We've got to think in terms of measurable commitments for people. Otherwise, see, if it's unclear, they won't want to give. The more we can make it clear, then we give them enough information they need to make an informed decision. People don't reject you all the time because they don't like you. They just go, I just don't know. I don't know what that's going to mean for me. So help them define that well, and I think your chances will be much greater.
So when we look at raising money in this economy, the reality of this economy, here's just some tips to go along with this. First of all, I think you need to think outside the box. You need to look at some creative ways to get your message out there, creative ways maybe that hasn't been done before, something that's unique to you, maybe your area, maybe your church, and ways that you can get this out there to show the need. Within the context of this very difficult and tough economy that we're in. Second is to make course corrections as needed. It's like Mike Tyson said going into a fight, every boxer has a plan and they have a strategy how they're going to do it. He said until the first punch is thrown. And then it just kind of throws you off and you lose all sense of where you're at and you're just kind of going for it. Well, this can happen. You can make these plans and you can say, we're going to raise this much and we're going to do it this way. And then you get into it and you see, this isn't working. We need to change horses sometimes in the middle of the stream. Mm-hmm. We need to adjust. We have this friend, a guy I helped coach. His name's Matt Larson. Matt started his church a couple of years ago in Thousand Oaks, California. And Matt had this plan of he was going to raise $100,000 and he was going to do it this certain way. And when he started asking people, it just wasn't working. And so halfway into it, he said, this isn't working. I need to come up with another plan. So he went to churches. This is within the Evangelical Free Church denomination. He went to churches and said, would you give $1,000 to our new church plan? And he asked me, as the director of church planning, would you write a letter just kind of recommending me, saying that, you know, you believe in me and what we're doing? And he would have that letter. So he would call guys up. He would go visit churches and say, would you please consider your church giving $1,000? Well, I don't care what church it is. Almost any church mm-hmm. could give $1,000. Mm-hmm. If they couldn't give it right up front, you know, you could give it in four installments over the next 4 months, $250 a month. And he did that, and one after one after one, and all of a sudden, these $1,000 gifts from these churches started adding up. Mm-hmm. And then individuals who were giving $500 or $1,000 started adding up. And he was able to meet his goal of $100,000 by that process, but he had to make course corrections. Third one is use your website well. This is where you don't want to scrimp. You want to build a great website. Find somebody who's a professional. If you can get a deal, get a deal. But this is where you don't want to save money so much. Excuse me. This is where you want to really have great quality, because you want to drive everything to your website. And your website should be telling a story. Your website should have a place for them to be able to give and donate on the website. Make it easy for them to give. So the website is very important in this part of it. And then fourth, you want to engage donors with social media. Social media now has become huge in terms of fundraising. So putting what you're doing on Facebook, on Twitter, letting people know, having people interact, letting them know how you're doing, how you're coming, what the needs are. It's amazing how people want to help you from a need standpoint based when they know that you have a need. Things that you need, you can even put on there. You know, we need, you know, two speakers. We need this. Mm-hmm. We need that. And it's amazing how people will respond to that.
Absolutely. I think it goes back to that clarity of saying, listing what you want, because people will go after one-time purchases and they'll go after tangible purchases because they go, you know what, it scares me to have to do a monthly contribution, but I want to buy this. So that way I know, man, I bought those speakers. I bought that trailer. The other thing is, and you go down the list, you'll see other items, but be positive, enthusiastic, be in person. You know, there was a guy that kept sending me emails. He met with me a while ago, and he came into town. He's like, hey, can I talk to you about what I'm doing? He's moving to England. He's trying to start a church out there. And that just seemed kind of like far out to me. I'm like, I'm not sure I want to be a part of that. But he kept on connecting with me through email, through Facebook, and he kept talking about how he was doing. We're 70% there. We're 80% there. We're 90% there. Then he sends me an email where he writes personal to Tim. We talked to Starbucks 6 months ago. Here below is my letter. Here's what's going on. Hey, what do you think? And it was like he caught me at a moment where I was like, you know what? This guy's tenacious. Mm-hmm. He's worked hard. He's 90% there. You know, I think, and so I forwarded to my business administrator and I said, hey, we got to talk about how we can do something for this guy. And what hit me was a lot of us just get, you send stuff to donors and you get about 80% there with them. You don't know you're 80% there because they haven't said anything to you. They're just kind of, but you don't realize you're 80% there. It's that last 20%. It's that other touch. It's that final push. It's that personal note that may just be the thing that makes them go, you know what? This guy, he's serious about this. He really wants to do this. And I'm telling you, from the other side, from the donor standpoint, it worked for me. I went, you know what? I like this guy. I like his, he's got some spark. He's got a little initiative. Let's help this guy out.
And if you can get specific, sometimes donors are looking for a specific amount or a particular project that's part of your new church. And they don't know how much to give. And sometimes you can get discouraged or frustrated. I'll give you an example. When God called us to start our third church in Southern California, I was at a conference, and the CEO of Purpose Driven Ministries was there, a friend of mine named Doug. And when I told Doug, you know, after doing these two incredible churches that God was calling us to do it again, he's like, Dave, that's great. I'm so proud. He goes, Purpose Driven Ministries will sponsor you. Well, Purpose Driven Ministry is a big ministry, a lot of money. I don't think they'd ever sponsored a church except for one other church before. And I went home and told my wife, and I said, honey, Doug and Purpose Driven Ministries are going to sponsor us. She said, oh, man, that's great. And so a few months went by. We were raising money. We're just weeks out from our first preview. I'd emailed Doug, you know. I even called and left a message one time, no return. Emailed him again, you know, and then I just thought, I don't want to lose this friendship over this. I'm not going to email anymore. And I didn't. And then I waited. And then it came down to we're literally weeks from being able to do previews. We had not bought. We'd bought the sound system and stuff, but we hadn't bought the portable church, all the stuff to put it in and haul it in and break it, do setup and breakdown with. And so we were $14,000 short. And I just sent off an email, and I just said, Doug, We're weeks away from starting. We're $14,000 short. And within an hour, he shot back an email. He said, we'll cover it. Here's $14,000 we're going to give you. And so sometimes it's just, it's staying there and then offering them a specific, here's an urgent need, this is what we need, and then being able to see them come through. So that's what we saw. Here's the next thing that I've just found is so important. In this economy, empathize with the donors. Let them know that you know that it's really tough. We know things are tight right now. It's tight for us, and it's really tight, and we really empathize with you in what you're going through and in the fact that you're even considering giving to us and our new church. We're so appreciative of that. And we know that it's really hard, and we know that things are being cut, and we know people aren't getting raises. That's why it's so amazing that you're considering this, and to empathize with them. And then to get personal with them, to get face-to-face. One of the things Tim and I do on the side, we'll tell you about it in a minute. We do a wedding business. We have a wedding /business/ministry that we do, and it's to unchurched couples in the community. And most of them are living together when they come to us. It's just a wonderful ministry. And they'll usually call us up, like I got a call yesterday, and they're interested. They found us on the web. They've been referred, whatever. And they're very interested. And my goal is you can only tell them so much, you know, on the phone. Mm-hmm. My goal is to get them face-to-face. So my first thing is to say, you know, Joe or Mary, whoever it is, I'd love to have a wedding inquiry meeting with you. It doesn't cost anything. We just sit down, get to know each other. Share about, you know, who you are, share about what I do, have you ask questions, and then I don't even ask you there for anything. It's just, you know, you can decide. And if I can get them into that, then about 90% of the time, they're going to want me to do their wedding. And have you found that, Tim?
Oh, absolutely. Years? Yeah, because you get that face-to-face, that personal contact, and the relationship begins to start. And in the wedding context, because most guys that do weddings are so incredibly boring that if you can tell them you're doing a wedding where you speak English and you crack a few jokes and, you know, you're not speaking Latin or whatever and you make sense to people, they'll go, wow, this guy, where does this guy come from? We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But I think also when it comes down to asking, though, too, is I always love the phrase, would you be willing to be one of our partners? Would you be willing to support us at $200 a month or $500 a month? Look them dead in the eye with a smile and just say, "Would you?" It's a simple question, and because it's that, then they have to be able to look at you and say, "No," and that's a hard thing to do. And I'm not saying you had a hard sell them, but think about it. When you face to face, there is a relationship that's starting, and then all of a sudden that they go, "Man, this is something that I want to be a part of because I know this guy." And there's a as you empathize with them, they can start empathizing with you.
And they see just face to face. I mean, you're going to send out emails, make up a master plan. We had a whole workshop on a master plan. Do a brochure. Don't send them the master plan that's, you know, 16 pages long in the mail. Send them the nice little travel brochure. Send them the nice little threefold color, explains what your vision and values are, tells about you, how God called you to do this. Send them that, but nothing is going to beat getting them across from, you know, sitting at the same table with a cup of coffee, eating lunch together, eating dinner together, and letting them see on your face the passion, the fear, the excitement, the joy, everything that is you at that point in raising this money for this new church and what God has called you. And when they can see that and you can get them face to face, the chances of you connecting and raising money go up and up at that point. Next is be positive and enthusiastic. Even when it's not coming in, you want to keep a positive attitude. You want to be enthusiastic as you go about doing it. Explain how their gift will help the start of the church. Tell them how their specific gift is going to help. And every gift matters and every gift helps. When we did our second church, we sent out a brochure. We got face-to-face meetings. We invited family, friends of friends to be part of it. And I'll never forget my wife's cousin, her name's Carlene. Carlene, they lived up in Central California. They didn't have much money. She was a teacher. He was just breaking into work. Her husband in a new career, and they committed to $5 a month. And they checked on the brochure, sent it in, and every month they sent $5. And so and I use that as an example because they were committed to it, they were faithful in it, and every bit helped. We had $500 a month was our highest from one family, and we had $5 a month, and we had everything in between. And you put all that together, and God used it. So you want to show how their specific gift can help.
Do you recommend putting a dollar amount that low, that there's an option for them?
We didn't put that dollar amount on there. They came up with the five. We didn't put five as an option.
Okay. Because I was thinking, though, it's kind of cool that because even though it was $5 a month, they were still invested with you, and they could go tell other people, hey, I'm investing in this church. They didn't have to tell them how much. But you had another donor. Hey.
They were part of it. And that's the thing. When Obama raised the money, his bread and butter were small gifts. He got millions of small gifts, and he used the internet to do that. And that was a whole new breakthrough in the election, the way he did it versus the way Mitt Romney did it versus the way George W. Bush did it. Obama used that, and he made it a big deal out of the small gifts, and it was a lot of these small gifts that raised the money for his campaign. So what can you expect when you go through this process of doing it? Oh, and the last one is just ask. Sometimes it just comes down to just asking. Mm-hmm. Again, if it's just face-to-face, like Tim said, you come to some kind of closure point, however it fits for you, to just say, would you be willing to help? And it's a yes or a no. And if it's a yes, then you decide. I never tell them how much money they should give. Mm-hmm. You decide. You ask God how much you should give, and don't give a penny more, don't give a penny less. Give what God's calling you to give.
Of course, you could always have little rankings, like Benny Hinn, if you gave a certain amount, you get a little jet, a model of his jet you could put on your mantle. You could offer pictures of yourself.
Yeah. The fundraising. Okay, here's just some things you can expect. Number one, you're going to see some breakthroughs. You're going to see God move. You're even possibly going to see some miracles where it wasn't going to work out, and at the last minute, God provides this gift, and it comes through, and it just humbles you, and it's just amazing. Second, you're going to grow spiritually. You, as the pastor, pastor's wife, you're going to grow spiritually. The people giving are going to grow spiritually. That's the amazing thing. It's going to stretch their faith as a disciple. Third, you can expect to be hassled by Satan. You can expect some things not to go right. You can expect problems, obstacles you're going to overcome. Because, if Satan can stop you from raising this money, then you're not going to start the church. And so he's going to be going for the jugular, and you just need to be aware of this. There is this satanic oppression that's going to happen in this process, but God is greater. Number four, you're going to sense this affirmation of your calling. That's a wonderful thing because you're doing a new thing. For most of you, you've never raised money. And so now you're going out and you're raising money to help fund the church. And as you see that coming in, it's just God, every step, every gift, just affirming, yes, Joshua, I've called you to this work. Yes, I'm going to provide. I'm guiding and I'm providing at the same time. And I'm bringing in, it's affirming the call. And then the amazing thing is to experience joy. Mm-hmm. To experience the joy that comes. And not only, again, you who are the recipient, mm-hmm. but the joy of the giver. The what they get from doing it. The largest gift I ever got, the first two churches, we never got any big gifts. I shared the last church, we had a $14,000 gift. First two churches, I think the largest gift we got was $1,000. We started two churches that grew over 1,000 in the next few years, and the largest gift we got of anybody was $1,000. But we got the regular, a couple hundred a month from this family, a couple hundred from that family. We got that in. But the third church, I went back. Now, I planted a church in my 20s, one in my 30s, and one in my 40s. So now in my 40s, I went back to some of the church planters that I had helped. And now I had coached and put a lot of time and blood, sweat, and tears into them and mentored them. And now they're pastoring churches, some of them are 2,000 or 3,000. And I remember calling up this one pastor actually in Arizona. And I said, hey, we're going to be planting this church. And I was all excited. It was our third church. And he just stopped me and he said, Dave, don't say anything more. We want to help you. And I said, oh, that's awesome. And said, in fact, I want you to come out to our church. We want to fly you and carry out to our church for the weekend. Come to our weekend service. And then after the last service on Sunday, I want to take you out to lunch. And I want to take some of our key staff out to lunch. We're going to all go out to lunch. So we go. We just have this wonderful time. And we go out to lunch. And so at lunch, we're just having a great time. And then this pastor stands up and he says, well, now, he said, I want to just say, we said we want to help support Dave and Carrie. We want to put our money where our mouth is. And so here, and he hands me this check, $20,000. I lost it. I mean, I had tears coming down. My wife's crying out loud. She's crying. This pastor starts crying. His staff starts crying. So we're in this restaurant, all these people, around. We got our own table. And we're just all weeping and crying. They're all just tears of joy. And they were just so excited and happy to be able to participate in it and to give. And it was just a God thing. And God used that money to help us start that church.
Expect that'll happen and expect yourself to grow spiritually. I remember this one gal that she had come to Christ after we had launched in our church. We had baptized her and her husband, and she came to kind of work as one of our admins. And she was all freaked out because she was doing the books, and she's like, we're not going to make it. We were hitting summer, and we're going to run out of money. And I was on my way out to lunch, and I go, you know what? I said, God's going to provide. And by the time I got back to lunch, she was crying, and she's like, you need to call your wife. And so I called my wife, and my wife said that we had there was a guy who was a baseball player that had moved into the area. We'd known him from when we were in California. He came to our church a couple times, and they had mailed their tithe check in, which was about like 10 times what we needed on a given Sunday. And and it was incredible. And she said, I can't believe this. And I said, well, I told you. I said, God provides for us. And it was a major spiritual growth point in her life. And I think that's just like, we don't depend on the money. We depend on the giver of the money. And that's why this is why this whole thing is a journey. And it's supposed to be a journey.
Okay, we want to get into some practical reasons why people give. When you start getting into psychological reasons, these have actually been tracked. Here's some reasons. Again, if you came in late, if you give me your email when we're done with the session, we will send you by email within the next 24 hours, we'll send you this PowerPoint presentation that has this on it. So the first reason, people give when they trust the leadership. The trust factor is huge. And when they trust you as the leader, they're very willing and motivated to give. Second, they give when they catch the vision, not when they see the need. There's always need. There's urgent need. But it comes down to really the vision. Again, that compelling vision. And there's four essential parts of the vision that you want to communicate. You want to tell about the purpose. Why are you doing this? Why is there needed a new church in Turlock, California? We have a couple starting in Turlock, California here. Why is there a new church needed in your community? What's going on there? And so you paint this picture and you tell the why we're doing this. And then the need, why now? Why it needs to happen now? There's a sense of urgency going on. And then you deal with the possibility. You deal with the how question. Here's how we're going to do it. And then number four, you're going to deal with the benefits. And you always want to give the benefits. When people give, what are the benefits? What is going to happen as a result? We hope to see hundreds of people saved over the next few months and years. We hope to see marriages where they're broken be restored. We hope to see, children following Jesus. We hope to see teenagers. So you're giving the benefits of what it's going to bring.
Don't focus on how great your church is going to be. Focus on what your church is going to do for the city. That's what's important, because even non-believers get amped about that, because they go, oh, you want to try to help partner with the city to make it better. Our answer is the gospel, is our faith. But it's those tangible results that are going to occur outside the church that tend to fire people up, and it's a real broad scale as well. So that's good.
But it's going to be unique to who you are. Mm-hmm. It should be unique to who you are as a couple. It should be unique to the area that you're in. And you're wanting to show that in your presentation and what you're doing in terms of your vision. Now, you want to be prepared for reactions. You're going to get different reactions from people. Anytime you talk about money, you're going to get a reaction. And there's basically three reactions that you can kind of expect. Number one, you're going to find people, those who are going to give no matter what you say or do. I mean, they're just in. Like when I called that pastor Fred in Arizona, he's like, hey, stop. We want to help. Don't even, you know, I didn't even ask. And he's like, we want to help. He was going to help no matter what. When he found out we were going to plant a church, there was that trust level. There was that we'd poured into his life. He wanted to give back. He wanted to help. There's those people. They're going to give no matter what you say. Then number two, there are those people, they're never going to give no matter what you say or do. One of my favorite things is when it comes to giving, some people stop at nothing. Think about it. And so it's just really true. Some people stop at nothing. And when you talk about money, I think you need to use humor, don't you? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very sensitive topic, so it's okay to use humor when you do a series and you in your church and you're doing a series on money. Don't you use humor, Tim, when you preach on money?
Oh, you have to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can expect those who, they're just not going to give. And so it's not your job to motivate them. If you see they're not going to give, then, you know, you go to somebody else. But then, they're number three, there are those who will give when they catch the vision. This third group is who you want to focus on. They want to give. They're not going to not give, but they really want to give. They want to see a vision. They want to see a plan. They want to see this picture, the story before them. And when you give that and they can wrap their minds around that, they become very motivated to give at that point.
I like what it says at the bottom. There's some people that you thought would give a lot that don't give anything. They have a saying in Texas, big hat, no cattle, right? You got to be careful of those people because they're going to roll up in the Mercedes and you're thinking, this guy's loaded and, you know, he wants to give to me and he loves Jesus, and you're going to be shocked and attempt to discourage you. The flip side is true as well. Some of the biggest givers in our church, you would never know it by how they live and by what they look like on the outside. Some people that are going to be very close to you that you think, well, this is my best friend. I mean, they said they'd be there for us and through thick and thin. Yeah, okay. We'll see how that works out when it comes out. And then other people will just, you'll talk to them. I've sat across the table from people, told them the vision of our church, and they'll pull out their checkbook right then and there and go, here you go. And you're just like, holy cow, I didn't think this guy made any money. And so don't ever sell anybody short and don't be surprised.
And one of the things you do normally is you write out a list of people you think are going to be potential donors. What we did is we wrote out a list of people we thought demonstrated prayer in their life, and we wanted them to be prayer warriors on our team for our new church. So we sent out a letter, and in this letter we said, you know, you've demonstrated prayer in your life, and we'd love you to come on and be one of our prayer partners for this first year in our new church, and we'll share periodically needs that we have. And second, we'd like you to consider giving. If you don't give and you just want to pray, we'd love to. That's just as important, if not more important for us, and we are serious. We'd love you to do that. And if you want to give, we'd love you to give and become part of that. And we'd send those out, and then if you use some kind of form letter, you know, and you're putting Dear Joe and Mary, always write on it in handwriting another note. How are you, Joe and Mary? So glad, you know, you're doing well. Just wanted to give you this. And you're saying something personal in the letter, not just some kind of form letter. And so we did this, and we had our first group gathering of a core group. I just moved into the area. It was an area I'd grown up in and came back to after 20 years. Gathered a lot of friends and some family members, had a big barbecue at our house. My brother, I have a brother who's a year and a half younger, he was playing golf with my cousin. His name's Doug. Great guy, lives down in San Diego. Doug's not a Christian. He just happened to be playing golf there that day. And after my brother and Doug finished playing golf, they came over to our house because we were doing a barbecue. And so we had about 30 people. These were going to be the core group people. And we had this barbecue, and at the end of it, we went around. Everybody got to meet everybody. And then in like the next 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, I just shared the vision. I said, guys, we've come back here because God's called us back here to start a church. And this is the kind of church it's going to be, and this is why we're doing it. Went through all those things we just looked at, and we ended. I didn't ask anybody for money. I was just trying to get buy-in from these people who wanted to be part of this new church plant, be part of the core group or the launch team. And so when we left, or when we finished, Doug, after he ate, he came in and listened to this, even though I knew, you know, he lives in San Diego. He's not even a Christian. And when he left, he wrote a check, and he gave it to me for $700. He said, here, I want to give to your new church. And I thought, I never would have thought of Doug being a possible donor to our new church. He doesn't even know the Lord. And so don't underestimate who could be part of it. Get the word out to as many people as you can, people who you've touched their lives, people who trust you, people you love, people who love you. And don't be surprised if some give a whole lot more than you ever thought, and the ones you think are going to give a lot sometimes don't give anything or give very little. So don't ever underestimate it. Always value each gift and every giver.
One thing Ron Sylvia taught me was entrepreneurs like other entrepreneurs. And so sometimes you'll have a non-believer, but they'll just go, man, this, you know, this guy's starting something new. That's exciting. Give to a regular church? I'd never do that. Those things are irrelevant and boring. I have no place there. But this guy seems, he's like me. So they'll get excited about that at times.
And to clear up misnomer, you still hear people say that 80% of church plants fail. And that's just not true. That is an old wives' tale. It might have been true at one point 10 or 20 years ago. It's just not true. Ed Stetzer did a study. It's called the Survivability Study, just a couple years ago, found that 68% of churches make it, succeed. 32% of churches fail. That's it within the first 4 or 5 years of their existence. So the reality is that's a big difference, isn't it? You're going to somebody, and if they say, well, I've heard 80% of churches fail, that doesn't sound like a good investment to invest in. It's like, no, actually, here, let me show you this study, and you can get it online. Just look under Church Survivability Study, Ed Stetzer, Google that, and you'll see this, and you'll find that, no, 68% succeed. Big difference there. So just know that going into it. Okay, here's three reasons people get upset about giving. Number one, there's hurt. They get caught up in their own pain. Maybe they've experienced a bad experience before when it came to giving. And so just the idea of giving, it kind of brings on this feeling. So they get caught up in that. Another sense may be a sense of guilt. They just don't want to give or feel they can't afford to give. Another one, and this you see this in a lot in churches and in Christians, is they're just naive. Sometimes it's immaturity. Sometimes it's just a naivete. They think that everything will pay for itself. They think, oh, that sounds great. And you know, I don't need to give anything. It's just going to take care of itself. You know, God will just bring something out of nothing. It's like, no, we have to fund this. Now we want to look at the rest of these 8 reasons why people give. We gave you the first 2. They trust the leadership. They catch the vision, not so much when they see the need as they catch the vision. Number 3, because it feels good to give. It really does. You know, they say it hurts to give. It actually feels good to give when you give with the right reasons and you give to something you really believe in and you trust in. Number 4, they are inspired by models. When they get inspired by these different models, they're more apt to give. They want to give when they become inspired. When they get involved in the process, I remember the first time I bought a stock, and once I bought that stock, I really followed that particular stock because I was invested, because I was giving. And once they give to you, they're going to want to follow you. They become involved in the process. Number 6, they give because you ask them to give. You're asking. It's that big ask. That's when people give. Number 7, you make it possible for them to give, and you make it easy for them to give. You show them how. There's a lot of different ways to do this, but you show them how and you make it easy. That's why on the website, that's why I like still a mailed hard copy brochure that has a little perforation on it so they can cut it off and check the box on there. Same thing if you can have that on your website, something like that. And they can have a donate button they can just push. They can give a one-time gift. They can give so much each month. And then they can do that online or they can mail it in. You want to make it easy. And then number eight, and this is huge, when their gifts are appreciated. It's so nice when you go back and you thank them, you appreciate them. Sometimes you'll give them a gift and you'll do an appreciation in their love language. I got a nice little appreciation last night from a couple, and they gave me a gift certificate. And it's just a couple I'm helping coach. And it surprised me, and it was just very nice. And it was a gift certificate, and it was a gift certificate to Whole Foods. Well, I love Whole Foods. I like to eat there. I like to shop there. And so I'm like, how did you know? And they'd actually called up a friend of mine and said, what is he like? Mm. And see, when you appreciate somebody like that, these people are giving you sometimes thousands and thousands of dollars, and just for you to be able to come back, write them a note, something they can go back to again and again. Email's great, but a hard copy note that they can look at over and over again, something they like, something they appreciate, tells them how much you appreciate it.
You know, I just want to affirm that, because so often when it comes to, especially when we have existing churches, we say we got to celebrate the servants, the people that use their spiritual gifts in the children's ministry or greeters, and appreciate your volunteers. And oftentimes it's the givers. Well, we don't want to know what people are giving, or we don't want to bring it up, or it's private and everything because of all that stigma. Realize that when people are giving to you, they're using their spiritual gift, and that needs to be affirmed, and that's that right. Needs to be celebrated. They're experiencing what God has called them to experience, and to affirm that is a wonderful thing for them.
And next we want to look, this is just kind of confirming this. This is George Barna, and Barna's research group did a project on reasons why people give, and they came up with six. Number one is the impact of the organization's work. Now, see, the problem with that, when you're starting a new church, you have no impact. You're just starting. So this would be like a Red Cross. People give to the Red Cross because the Red Cross has done so much incredible work over decades. It's something they want to give to. But you don't have that luxury when you're starting a new church. You have no track record other than yourself and your own leadership. So that doesn't apply so much. But number two, the efficiency with which the organization uses the funds. So they're looking, when I give to an organization, I'm looking at how much of it is going toward administrative fees, how much of it is actually going toward ministry. And you know what the reality is? The bulk money that you're raising is going toward your salary. Do you realize that? Most of it is going toward your salary, and that's fine. And it's okay to tell people that, you know, this percentage is going toward our salary, and they're giving directly to help support you.
Dave, now, how do you feel real quick about people posting the actual salary number or making that available?
I wouldn't post what your salary is on there, but you could go in percentages of how much is being given is doing that. We didn't do that. If somebody would have asked me, I would have told them, but I wouldn't put that so much on there unless they specifically asked.
Okay.
Number three is the presence of a compelling vision. Again, people give to vision, not so much to need, so a compelling vision. Number four, donors' personal relationship with the organization. And again, with the organization, it's just you at the beginning. So the relationship with you, people give to people. Number five, the personal benefit the donor receives by giving. Again, that joy that comes from giving. And number six, the urgency of the need. Now, we said people give to vision, not need, but people do give to need, just not as much. Vision's much higher. But when there is a need and that need is urgent, there is a timetable. The clock's ticking, and we're getting ready to start previews. It's time to now go get money for that mail-out we need to raise money for. It's time to go buy this equipment, and we need it because we're starting at this point. So there is a sense of urgency there. Okay, the next one is practical tips for raising money, how to finance the plan here. When God truly calls you to start a church, He's also speaking to others about the funding of the church. That's the amazing thing. That's where the trust in is, that God's guiding and providing, not just in your heart, but in other people's hearts. So the church planner's job is to find those people who God's prepared their hearts. Pray for God to supply what the church needs. Share your strategic plan I like to refer to it as a business plan. We call it a master plan as well, that includes your purpose, your values, your vision, your strategy, and your budget. Make that list of donors who you're going to contact, who are potential donors for your new church.
On the business plan, we had a business plan seminar here earlier in the week. And Dave, is there a website they can go to? Can they go to the Next website and get business plans?
Yes, if you go to Next, N-E-X-T, churches.com, and you go on that site, look under resources, and you'll see there's about 10 different business plans. And these were business plans that made the top 10 at our Nuts and Bolts conference 2 years ago. The winner received $20,000 at that conference. We're doing another conference like that in August out here in Florida in Ocala, August 27th and 28th this summer. But there's business plans on there for you to look at. You can download them. You can print them out. Some of them would be great templates for you to use and to put your own content into. So that's huge. They're looking for that. Just real quick, we're not going to spend much time on this, but these are sources, if you'll see here listed, sources for funds. Still, even with the networks like Acts 29 and New Thing, they're all wonderful. Denominations are still planting about 3/4 of the churches that are being planted. And so denominations have money that is slotted for church planting. So if you're not in a denomination, it's a great thing to be able to be a part of a good denomination that does that. The Evangelical Free Church, which we're a part, does that. Of course, the North American Mission Board with Southern Baptist, AG, those are just a few. Another one is a mother church. We love to see, you know, the idea of a daughter church, mother church, having a baby. Birth is another analogy besides church planting. And one of the things I've learned is not only mother churches, but partner churches. We started our first church, we had one mother church. I thought, well, that's all you got. You only have one mother, right? Then I found, no, you can have lots of mother churches. You can have lots of partner churches. So the second church we did, we had like 5 different churches that helped sponsor us. I found the more the merrier in that. How many did you guys have?
Well, we had one.
You just had one.
But yes.
You had a real good,
but right now what we're doing now is when we're trying to plant more churches, rather than putting all the pressure on ourselves, we're gathering other churches in the area, and we're getting something going with it with our denomination in that particular part. But do we want to talk about the wedding thing?
We do. We're going to get to that in just a minute. I want to just give you these. So partner church, director of missions, donors, family and friends kind of become your big bread and butter. What is needed? You're going to ask people to contribute to the plan here. Let me pull this one up. Okay. Here's something too that Tim and I shared that we do. This is something I created because one of the things you're going to do, we don't encourage going bivocational so much, because if you go bivocational where you're working a full-time job and it's a lot of times it's not related to what you're doing in terms of the church, then chances are your church is never going to grow beyond a couple hundred people. And chances are it's going to take much longer for you to launch the church when you're going bivocational. But here's something that we kind of happened onto. It wasn't planned, but we just happened into it. It was a wedding ministry. And so I created this site called WeddingPastorDave.com. And we now have a wedding pastors network. And now we have church planters who are going in the community. I've created the system of how to advertise it, how to get the word out there to reach unchurched couples in the community. So it becomes this win-win situation because now you're becoming the go-to wedding guy for unchurched couples who are getting married in your community. You're getting to know them. You're befriending them. You're doing their wedding. You're meeting all their family and friends. And now we've seen these couples then come back and come into the church. We've seen a number of them get saved and come to know Christ through this process. So it's been a real neat thing. So I started this in Southern California and L.A., and I thought, well, it's worked here. Will it work in Phoenix?
And I got to tell you, I never liked doing weddings. I just thought they were a pain in the butt. And so I called him one day because I'm like, can you just give me some wedding like information, some counseling stuff, because all my stuff's old. And I just had a really blah kind of attitude towards weddings. And he's like, I started a wedding business and you got to do it too. And I'm going, I don't want to do that. And then he starts telling me. So what I did was I basically just ripped off his idea and he helped me make a website. So I got Wedding Pastor Tim. And it's like the same thing. And I'm in Arizona, I'm in the Phoenix metro area, and we're on the knot, and you don't do anything. You just wait around, and people call you. And it is unbelievable, the ministry. I have shared the gospel with so many couples that would never, ever, ever go to church. And all of a sudden, they're like, I like this. We need this. Where's your church? And it is just phenomenal. If I was planting a church in a brand new town, that would be the very first thing I would do is I'd show up. Because remember, as a pastor, that's a service you can provide. You're actually supplying something to your community. And what I always tell them is I go, look, I have to come up. I speak in front of hundreds of people with fresh material 30 minutes a week. I'm good up front. Most wedding ceremonies, the bar is so low that if you can just be a normal guy. And I did one on Saturday night. And the family was coming up afterwards like, who are you? This was so cool. And here's the great thing, too. This unchurched couple that I did the wedding for, they had family members come up and they go, you have no idea. We have been praying for them. How did they find you? This is a God thing. We want to see them come to Christ. I'm telling you, it is phenomenal. Weddings still aren't my favorite thing to do because you got to put a suit on and make sure it's clean. But, but I always drive away from those going, man, God used me. And I think it's fantastic. And it's not hard. It's really
on the other hand, love weddings. I love the fact that there's a celebration, get to be part of it. There's a lot of aspects I could share that I love about it. But the thing that it does is it gets you into the community. You're not hanging out at Starbucks, engaging people in spiritual conversations. You are actually out providing a wonderful service, doing it with the love of Jesus. And you're earning a good wage for doing it, which helps supplement what you're doing in terms of your salary in the church plant. So it's a wonderful thing. We want to close off with one last thing here. What financial partners are looking for? What are they looking for in order to be a donor? I'm going to give you three things. Number one, they're looking for a solid plan. They want to see something that really has been thought through. That's realistic. It's not abstract. It's not up in the clouds. Like we want to reach 5,000 people in the first year, you know, something that's really realistic, solid. Number two, they're looking for a conservative budget, a modest budget, not something extravagant, not something nickel and dime, but something that's, again, very realistic, conservative in terms of your budget. I'd much rather be conservative and go over than have this huge thing and fall way under. Number three, the last thing they're looking for, again, this comes down to trust, they're looking for a proven leader. They're looking for somebody who's led, who's been successful in the past. It may be just starting ministry. You've started something and there's been fruit from it, so they've seen a proven leader. Okay? If you guys have questions and answers, Tim and I are going to stay up here. I know there's a little break now, but we're going to stay up here. We'll answer any questions that you may have. And again, if you will bring up your email to me, give me your email. I will send you by email in the next day this PowerPoint presentation. Would love to do that. And just thanks for coming. And question here, and then you guys can come up. Yes. You can send them an envelope. We just trusted them, and we sent out you get on Constant Contact or MailChimp or whatever, and you got a monthly thing going out that's telling what God's doing in your church, and it's just a constant reminder each month of, that people are giving and the money's coming in. You're reporting on what's going on. So, yeah. Okay, great. Thanks for coming, you guys.